If you're a founder, parent, or investor watching the ad tech wave, here's the challenge. How do we give kids the benefit of digital education without drowning them in screen time? Irene Klemm, co-founder and co-CEO of Edurino, has raised millions to build a hybrid learning model, combining physical toys with digital apps that's scaling fast across Europe. Today, we'll uncover how she's reimagining early childhood education, attract top VCs, and reshaping the future of learning so the next generation grows up curious, confident, and ready for what's next. And by the way, Irene was just named Female Entrepreneur of the Year 2025 at the German Startup Awards. Congratulations.
Welcome to StartupRad.io. Your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
My guest today is Irene Klemm, the co-founder and co-CEO of Edurino, one of Europe's most exciting edtech startups. Since launch 2019, Irene and her co-founders have built a hybrid learning platform that combines beautiful design physical toys with a gaming digital app for children ages 4 to 8. The mission? To make digital education safe, playful, and truly effective. Irene's work has been recognized in major ways. She was named to Forbes 30 Under 30, and just this year, she was awarded Female Entrepreneur of the Year at the German Startup Awards 2025, handed out by the German Startup Association. Congratulations, Irene. This continues our Startup Radio tradition of interviewing winners of the German Startup Awards every year since 2021. I'm impressed by myself, actually. Edurino has already attracted a 17 million Series B investment by Ravensburger Ventures. For everybody who doesn't know them, they're the tabletop game people here in Germany. Summitier and existing investors bringing a total to more than 30 million euros, according to Crunchbase. Amongst the investors is DN Capital, known for investments like Shazam, Edeka, now part of Oracle, and AutoOne. And the company has scaled across Europe, the UK, and other countries, partnering with major retailers like Müller and Amazon to bring the toys and apps into homes across Europe. Today, we'll dive into how Irene and her team are navigating the challenges of balancing screen time with real play, scaling an edtech startup across multiple European markets, and what the future of hybrid learning means for founders, investors, and parents worldwide. Whew, Irene, that was quite a lot of introduction. Thank you for being here and congratulations to your German Startup Award.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
Before we get started, where did you put the award? Where is it located physically right now?
I put it into the office because the award is not just for me, but for the entire team. So therefore, it's there to see for everyone.
Mm-hmm. My virtual assistant helped me to prepare this interview, and I really love this. Once upon a time, Irene, take us back to the very beginning, before Edurino became one of Europe's fastest growing ad tech startups. What was your personal journey into early childhood education and what inspired you to build a hybrid learning solution that combines physical toys and apps?
So my brother was very early on into computer games and coding. And I remember when I was still a child, our parents never bought us a Nintendo or any console of any kind, but they gave us one computer to share, which is always interesting amongst siblings. And I loved playing learning games even back then. And the interesting thing is that they haven't really evolved any further. So back then, the computer wasn't just for fun, but it was for discovery for us. And this early fascination shaped my belief that technology, if designed right, could spark curiosity rather than kill it.
I was laughing here a little bit. I was just imagining the great idea to share a computer between siblings. And actually, I have to admit, no surprise that your brother was into gaming and coding. I was at least into the same stuff. before Edurino was launched in 2021, what was the state of early childhood education and edtech in Europe? And why were parents and educators still struggling with digital learning for kids aged 4 to 8?
So before Edurino's parents basically had two extremes, either avoid screens completely or try to avoid them completely, or hand over the tablet to the kid and hope for the best. And neither was good enough, and neither is preparing them properly for the future. Educators back then told us that there was no trusted digital solution tailored for kids at this very young age, particularly in the preschool age. And if you looked at the infrastructure, it was quite shocking. So around 25% of schools in Germany had WLAN, Wi-Fi, meaning that 75% of schools didn't before COVID. There was basically no digital infrastructure. And COVID then accelerated the conversations, but parents were left with very few quality tools designed for young kids. And that's the problem that we are actively solving with Edurino.
I'm a little bit curious, was there a specific moment, maybe a parent, educator, or entrepreneur, when you realized the way kids learn with screen is broken and a hybrid play-based approach could be the solution? And what was the moment you actually imagined this hybrid? Did you just put a toy on a tablet? How was the process?
So I'm taking you back again to 2020, COVID lockdown, kindergartens suddenly closed, primary schools suddenly closed. And of course, there were some solutions for schools, but parents were very much left alone at homes because everybody assumed both parents are home so they can take care of the child. But of course, also back then, both parents were working and they had to occupy the kids somehow. And then when we realized this, we went actively into families. And I remember watching a friend's child swiping on the tablet and completely absorbed by the screen. But the content ultimately was empty calories. So in that moment, I thought we need to rethink screens completely because they are not TV replacements anymore. They are fully fledged computers and we have to choose what to do with it. Is it passive consumption or is it something positive, interactive, educational with it? And we also need to be the driver of that. And we need to teach the children early on how to use these tools. So, of course, COVID accelerated that realization and the infrastructure because suddenly millions of families were forced into a digital learning without any quality solutions. And we could see that ever since the edtech market grew massively. So global investments jumped just under 5 billion pre-COVID to more than 20 billion in 21. That was the number that I found. But hardly any of them, even back then, but even now, is targeting early childhood because it's a completely different model. We actively decided also back then that we need to target and we need to sell to directly the families and not to these big structures, not to the government and not to schools primarily, even though now we, of course, have a very strong presence. But back then we knew that this D2C approach is the only solution, how we can reach the families fast enough with this strongly needed solution to bridge this time that they have at home forcefully by COVID.
I've seen quite a lot of and heard quite a lot of very interesting stories concerning how it was for a lot of parents to have one or two kids at home. The parents worked from home and nobody really had a place to sit or a setup or even an idea how this could work. Very interesting times. As an entrepreneur, you have to make difficult decisions. What was the toughest challenge in convincing both parents and investors that hybrid learning, like physical toys plus an app, could be trusted as both educational and safe for young children?
So edtech has historically always been underinvested. So the hardest challenge for us was convincing parents, convincing investors that this hybrid learning wasn't just a gimmick. but that they can trust it and that this is the future. So that's why we very early on partnered with kindergartens. We brought educators into our team. We partnered with networks. We also recently partnered with Cambridge University in a short study to show that the games don't just entertain kids, but they create real value. So we could show that, for example, problem-solving skills are enhanced by 35%, reading skills are enhanced by 25%. And with this very hard data, with the traction that we could show, paired with the stories from the parents, we could then prove that our model is delivering real educational impact. And that was the key to a market where more than 70% of the parents say that they worry about too much screen time. So also to educate the parents and to educate the investors that it's not about empty screen time, but it's about using digital devices as a tool and creating something positive, future-proof, and highly needed for future skills for the children.
Mm-hmm. When I was preparing this interview, I was thinking about there was a call like a year or two ago from educators to actually tune down the screen time children have at schools. In a world where Germany lacks digital education, I was just wondering quickly about your thoughts about that before we move into the next prepared question.
So what is quite interesting is that Germany is a bit of a vacuum compared to other countries around us, meaning that in Germany, the discussion is still screen or no screen, whereas in other countries, the debate is more about what kind of screen time and what kind of screen. So our message is the right kind of screen time in the right dose. And parents need partners that they can trust, because ultimately there is no binary approach to this. It's not no screen time or sitting in front of the screen for 10 hours, but we need to find a way how we can balance it, how we can teach the children also how to integrate it purposefully into the routines without having this overconsumption at one point. Because in reality, what we observe is that if parents don't actively take a role and don't speak with children openly about what they do in the digital world, it can very easily happen that when they are 6, 7, 8 years old, they end up at TikTok without any consequence and without the parents even having an idea what they do on screen. And now a lot of parents may think, how is this even possible? But kids find a lot of ways how to trick a tablet, how to enter the Wi-Fi, even though the parents think they are not. So therefore, that's why it's so important to take an active role here and to accompany the children in this frankly scary world. I mean, when we look at the numbers, like nowadays, even in Germany, over 70% of the 4 to 5 year olds spend regular time on YouTube Kids, meaning that they have screen time. And now it's about turning the screen time into time that matters and not being wasted by passive consumption.
I see. Yeah, it also helps if they're watching something really exciting or stuff like that to tell them that it's made by someone, that it follows a predictable arc, and that it's made for purpose. I really learned that with my children. Going back to Edorino, every startup hits an early wall. What was Edorino's first major pivot in product distribution or messaging, and how did it change your trajectory?
Yeah. So I think there were two main points. So the first one, I mean, we started with Edorino in a bit of a special world, I'd say, with COVID, and we brought a completely new product to the market. And then, of course, the big question is, do people just say that they like it, or do they really love it, and are they willing to put their credit card on the table? So I'd say the first and following this approach, we then did a crowdfunding campaign where people could pre-purchase our products. And following that, we thought, that's a great approach to be D2C only and D2C first. But we quickly realized that an educational product is not a one touch point product. People need a lot of touch points, meaning they may want to see it in familiar places like kindergartens, like primary schools. They want to see it at a friend's place or have a personal recommendation about it. They want to see it at their favorite retailer. And that made us realize very quickly that we also need to invest strongly into these partnerships to create these touch points for parents. And another pivot was how we addressed the audiences. So online, we speak very much to the parents about trust, about pedagogy. But we saw that in store, because usually the parents are with their children. So we need to appeal also with the product a lot more to the kids themselves and have them getting excited about the characters, about everything that we offer with Adorino. So this dual channel approach unlocked growth for us. And to put this into perspective, nowadays, still around 45% of toy purchases are made offline, meaning that it has been historically very important for us to not only build a D2C approach, but also to trust these strong partners, but also our kindergartens, libraries, and so on and so forth. So that were probably two of our main pivots.
And I have to admit, your little play toys, they look really nice. I think you got inspired by Tony boxes or something. Yes, there's one, for example. And the children can play with that. That's physically really, really nice. I like that.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I was wondering, in B2B marketing, you usually say 6 to 8 contacts. In Germany, it's rather 10 to 12, maybe 15 contacts. How many touch points do you need in order for somebody to really take it seriously and buy?
Yeah. So we see in the online world, for parents, it's also around 7. And those touch points are online, but they also can be offline in retailers, can be in partners, so also around 7.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about the conflict about screen time. How do you position your model, especially for parents, there between the two maximums, no screen time or all screen time?
Yeah. So to be real here, no screen time is not possible anymore. Kids, on the one hand side, get in contact with screens, if you like it or not. And on the other hand side, they need these skills in the future. So it's nothing that's optional anymore, but it's a crucial skill that kids are going to need also to know what happens when I'm in the online world, what happens with my digital footprint, how can I use this tool in the best way to benefit me and in a responsible way. So therefore, how we position ourselves, even though it may sometimes seem counterintuitive, is that we are actually a tool how to introduce responsible educational screen time. And in a lot of households, we actually even use to reduce screen time. Because when you look at offerings, let's say, again, a YouTube Kids, episodes go on and on and on. And this is how they are designed. So it's very hard to find this point where you as a parent can also say, hey, now it's enough. At Adorino, we integrated into the product a screen time limit, meaning that after 20, 25 minutes, whatever you set, there is a character saying, hey, that was so much fun. Now you have one more game to play, helping also with the transition of the kid. And then we see you next time. And then the game falls asleep. And at the same time, the kids continue playing with the real character. So it helps a lot more to integrate it into the daily routine and not to lead to overconsumption at some point. So that's how we position ourselves in this world as a positive tool.
Debate about screen time is pretty interesting because a few years ago when my son was born, I was pretty sure helping him to understand coding, helping him to speak several languages, even Chinese, would be an advantage. Now, a lot of this went out the window with vibe coding, self-driving cars, and so on and so forth. But I do believe at least the screen time, that will stay valid for some time.
Basically, the access to the digital learning world and the access to this tool that is needed to then benefit in everything that you just mentioned, right? Vibe coding. I mean, it's going to be on a screen. Also to steer your self-driving car, it needs to be on a screen. So it's about setting this seat very early on and educating the kids what is even possible in a responsible way.
Our audience already knows that we are interviewing you for 2 interviews and the other one will be the founder's vault. At one point, you faced a decision that could have made or broken Adorino, a moment where parental trust, funding, or your vision were all on the line inside the founder's vault. We go into how you navigated that high-stakes decision, what almost went wrong, and what you learned from this near miss. Talking about obstacles here. How did you personally navigate skepticism from investors, educators, or parents? I remember you talked about continuously underfunded ed tech. And I'm sure they questioned whether the children would really engage with a hybrid model.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's pretty easy. You give the kid the tablet, you give the kid the nice figures, and they stop playing. But if you're sitting in front of an investor, you don't have a kid and the toys at hand, right?
Yes, that is true. So I think with every completely new approach and new model, there is skepticism. So some investor asks us, will kids even use a hybrid toy app model? What is the toy even for? Why isn't it just an app with a subscription? Then also educators question whether digital play could be as meaningful. Parents worried about safety. So what we did is we always navigated by going back to two main things. The first one is evidence, and the second one is empathy. So evidence, so we, for investors, we showed this early traction that the kids, the parents really love our products. We could see in our data that we have very high retention. Kids play a lot of Edurino. They really love it. And that's also the key, remembering who you're doing it for, the user. And then the second one, empathy. So listening to parents, listening to children primarily. So our main users and the customer, showing them that we designed Edurino with them, not just for them. And that then spoke for itself. And when we look at the investors again, a lot of them are parents. So what we did is we always asked them also to try out our products with their kids and to have that speak for themselves. I mean, of course, it's just N equals one. It can't speak for an entire industry, but paired with traction, paired with data, that then made a holistic picture and that could convince them.
In the early days, what was your first early traction milestone? What was the first clear sign that there was product market fit? Was it like the first retailer that took you in app downloads or parents, they went out and did testimonials? Actually, we have to tell our audience 80-85% is from Germany, but testimonials, reviews, text, it is pretty rare. I do have a lot of 5-star ratings, but the last time somebody wrote really a review in an app store was more than 3 years ago in Apple Podcasts, 3 years ago. So the audience here is a little bit different from international norms.
Yeah, so I mean, for us, I would say that it came in two stages. I mean, this very early proof was this crowdfunding campaign where we saw people are actively putting their credit cards there. So we had around 500 supporters, yes, from our network, but not all of them. So there were also parents outside of our network who were like, okay, yes, it's something that I need and I want to purchase it. So that was definitely the very first sign, paired with, after our very first article at Gründerszene, a distributor approached us and then we quickly came into the first retailer. Our very first retail partner was Müller, one of the biggest German toy retailers that there is. And that definitely showed us that there is a market for this because also the retailer thinks that they can sell this well. And then I would say there was a second stage because then the question, of course, is this a niche product or can this be a mass market product? And by now we are in 400,000 families. And with that, we could clearly show that it's not only for a niche, but it should be available to anyone, accessible to anyone. And therefore, I think the second point was when we sold probably the 100,000 starter sets mark or so, when we really knew, okay, apparently, if I imagine these people in one room, this is not just a niche.
Mm-hmm. You have some experience now running Edurino for 4 years almost. If you were asked to write the playbook for edtech founders today, what early moves, product design, retail strategy, fundraising, would you consider non-negotiable?
So if I were writing a playbook for edtech founders, three things for me would be non-negotiable. The first one by far is always design and live up to user first. So in our case, if kids don't love it, nothing else matters. Therefore, if you have conflicting decisions to make, conflicting data points, always choose the ones for your main user, in our case, the kids. Second one, non-negotiable with the edtech product particular, is earn trust very early. So you need to be able to show safety, very excellent pedagogy, credibility, real results. So when we look at the market, 8 out of 10 parents say that they check whether an app is educational even before downloading. So this is crucial that you have these ticks and that you can show the excellence of your product. And thirdly, I'd say securing the right partners. So it depends a bit on the edtech product, but whether in our case it's retailers, whether it's investors, whether it's the right school system, the right network into that direction, you need the right allies to accelerate growth exponentially. And from experience in the market, most models in D2C make it with a D2C first. In edtech, make it with a D2C first approach. So it's very, very hard to come with a B2G approach and make it really happen in the edtech space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, when you were talking, I was thinking about one could also make it into a serious game.
Mm. Yes, of course. Yeah.
You scaled into multiple European countries already. What framework or process did you use to adapt Edureno for new markets with a different education system and parental expectations?
Yeah, so scaling into new markets required a very clear framework. So we always work with local educators, parents, and we adapt our content to fit the cultural expectations. And that's how we were able to expand across Germany, Austria, Switzerland, the UK successfully. We're now going to launch 2 additional European markets, and every launch is always backed by research. And depending on the country, we adapt more or less of our product. So the good thing with Edureno is that in the core of it, we teach core competencies that every kid is going to need around the globe in the future. And that's not necessarily only school skills, like hard skills, but it's also problem solving, creativity, critical thinking, logical thinking, foundations for coding, and emotional skills. So everything that equips the children to be future proof, resilient human beings, whatever comes their way. So, and then, of course, we also need to adapt the messaging and all of our advertisement around that accordingly. So to give you a very concrete example, we had this already that in Germany, the screen time is still more of a critical topic than it is in other countries. So in Germany, it's more opening up this entire world that you can support your kid in a good way with the screen. Whereas in other countries, it's more about turning screen time into positive time because they are having a lot more screen time already.
Hmm. For our audience, for those listening, how did you think about screen time in your family or school? Do you lean towards more guardrails or more trust in digital tools? Drop your thoughts in comments or LinkedIn. We'll feature the best insights in our recap. What was the turning point strategy that unlocked your Series A, and how did you position your hybrid model to stand out in a very crowded, mostly digital-only edtech market?
So for us, the turning point was changing the narrative. So we're not selling toys, not at all. We're building a category-defining learning system. And this framing resonated with investors and helped us raise the past rounds. So in addition, as said before, most investors are parents and can be convinced by having the kids play and love Edureno. So, for example, in our Series Seed, we had an investor who gave the products to his son, and he said, "This is so much better than YouTube," and that was the trigger point for them investing.
I see. We'll be back right after a short ad break where Irene shares the strategy that changed everything for Edureno from being a promising startup to raising 30 plus millions in total and expanding across Europe. Hey guys, welcome back to the interview with Irene, the Female Entrepreneur of the Year 2025 German Startup Awards and co-founder of Edureno. When we're talking about startups, we're still talking about growth. What growth model worked best for Edureno? Retail partnerships, direct-to-parents marketing, community building, or anything else?
So retail and institutional partnerships, they give us a lot of credibility. But I would say that the real magic to unlock growth happens when parents share their real stories online. So that community building drove word of mouth more than any ad spend could. So today, a very high percentage of our new customers comes from word of mouth, comes from peer recommendations. And therefore, that is the most important fuel driver for us.
Let me approach it that way. When you had limited resources, but I have to admit, I talked to founders who raised to more than 100 million, and it's not like they could do everything. They still see the restriction of you, of their resources. But when you had more limited resources, what strategic trade-offs did you make, and how did you decide where to place the biggest bets?
So when you're resource constrained, I think there's also some beauty in it, because it forces you to rigorously focus on what matters. And for us, we always defined that that is the kid, meaning that we have always decided against a lot of things that would be nice to haves for the parents or nice to haves for educators, because we have been requested a lot, from dashboards to fancy extras here and there. But ultimately, we always ask ourselves, does this benefit directly the child? And this clarity, of course, helped us allocate the resources to what truly mattered. And even though we grew and even though we have more resources and people now, we still try to bring in the same level of focus even now.
We've been talking about credibility. I want to ask you which gave you the most credibility, but it was actually the institutions. We already cleared that out in the other question. Let us go to the scaling challenges. You scaled across Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and UK. What was the hardest challenge? The logistics, because you still have physical toy, localizing the digital content, or hiring talent across markets?
So we always knew that we want to reach as many kids as possible with Adorino. And that being said, we always designed our products to be scalable, to be adaptable to different educational models too. And I would say that the hardest challenge never is the product market fit, because as soon as people have us in their hands, they love Adorino, they love the products, they remain in the system for a long time, etc. But the toughest challenge for us was this message market fit. I've talked about some learnings, how Germany is also different to other countries before, but to convey this also in your marketing messaging, that has definitely been a journey for us, and also finding out what channels really work, who do people really trust? Because in Germany, let's take an example of influencers. An influencer, a mumfluencer, once told me that she's the digital best friend of her followers. And in Germany, this is really true. People have very strong trust in some influencers. In other markets, for example, the UK, it's not the same picture, meaning that that is also a channel that works very differently than it does in Germany. So figuring this out, where do people get their main source of information? Is it through the educational system, where also in Germany, for example, we do have very strong trust in the system. Also, most of the kindergartens, everything in preschool is state-owned, whereas in the UK, for example, over 30% is private. So it's a different market. And to understand this and really build these touch points, build these trust points, and therefore reach parents, because we are not just selling another consumer product, we are selling an educational product that parents need to trust and be convinced of.
I'm actually a little bit shocked by that, for the simple reason people trust in influencers, they trust in people who make their living by selling as much as possible to them. Okay, that's a completely different topic to discuss about mankind, humankind here.
Yep, but you know, maybe to just say one thing here, though, we have a lot of influencers that we work closely with that don't just advertise any product. They really want to test the product through and through. They have a lot of questions. It's very close relationships that we have, and only then they advertise it. So I also want to say this, that there is not just anyone selling anything, but some of them have to be really, really convinced.
Mm-hmm. That's usually the best ones, and the effort usually pays off. Inside the founders world, you'll share investor pitch deck structure and fundraising lessons, how you raised 30 millions, insights you won't hear anywhere else. Let us go a little bit into the outlook. What's next for you guys? Are you focused on deeper penetration in Europe, new product categories, or expanding to something like North America and Asia?
So our vision is to make Edureno the gold standard for hybrid learning globally. So first, we deepen our penetration across Europe, and long term, we want to expand our age range so that children can grow with Edureno from kindergarten all the way through primary school and also beyond. And we can see that the global edtech market is projected to exceed 350 billion by 2030. And we see that early childhood education is a very important growth driver within that. However, there's still very, very few offerings. And that's why we have high ambitions to move into that and to fill that gap.
And admittedly, Edureno is not 5 years old, but looking out 5 years, how do you see edtech for children evolving, especially now that AI is not really in their gamification and hybrid learning models?
So in 5 years, I believe that AI will personalize education at scale, but it needs to be combined with real-world play, especially at this very young age. And therefore, I'm convinced that hybrid learning is not a trend, but it's the future, especially for young children. And one thing that will always remain true is that in education, parents demand the highest quality and the safest product. So that's why successful edtechs must always stay kids first. And just to put it into perspective, over 90% of parents also say that quality, safety is their top priority. And therefore, I believe, of course, we will see a huge shift in the entire educational industry. But especially at this very young age, I don't believe that everything will be digital only. And we still need humans to provide this trust factor, to provide the safety factor, because otherwise it will be out of our hands, and all of us parents still want to have some control over what kids at that age do.
A little bit teasing out a contrarian view of you, what's one big assumption about edtech or early childhood learning that you believe is completely wrong, and why?
So many still believe that children under the age of 3, under the age of 4 should avoid screen time entirely. And I personally believe quite the opposite, because you just simply can't avoid it anymore. So therefore, I believe that digital literacy is a new life skill. And the question is not if, because they will come into contact with screens independent of what you try and what you do. So therefore, the question is how, and we need safe, playful, and balanced screen time.
Actually, you can get in contact with screens just simply by driving on the bus, on the tram, in the subway.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, also FaceTiming with your grandparents, etc. It's also a form of screen time.
Yes, you just need to get them to reply and to pick up the call. Sorry, personal memories here. Our audience, if you guys out there were to build an ad tech startup today, what would your focus be on? Hybrid models, AI-driven personalization, teacher-first platforms. Share your vote. We'll feature the results in our follow-up newsletter. Let's go a little bit into the advice you have for other founders. What's your most important piece of advice to fellow founders building in trust-sensitive industries, ad tech, healthcare, fintech?
So in trust-sensitive industry, I would say that product is about half the battle, and the other half is credibility. So it's important to get the right partners, the right advisors, and never underestimate also the power that a brand has.
If you could redesign education for the next generation from scratch, no legacy systems, no regulators holding you back, what would it look like?
If I could redesign education, it would be curiosity first. So I wouldn't provide a rigid curriculum, no fear of mistakes, no grade system so early on. So all about play, all about exploration, and also analog and digital tools designed to unlock creativity, not just consumption. That would be my ideal world, to build everything around a very individual pace that every kid has.
And the usual closing questions, are you open to talk to new investors?
Always.
Always. And are you currently looking for talented employees?
Yes, also always. And at the moment, particularly in marketing and also in product. So if our vision and our cause resonates with you, please reach out.
Irina, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you here. Congratulations again to your STEM German Startup Awards. Hope to have you back in a few years talking about your progress and success here.
Thank you so much, Jörn.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.